Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I am often joined by the King of Casters and the Chief Defender of the Faith, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, this is one I'm looking forward to an awful lot.
That is fantastic news. Yeah, I mean, me too, because, we've been listening to this band for a very long time, and I'm super happy that they're back, and I'm also super happy that we have their lead singer, David Wanless of Svengali. David, how are you?
I'm fantastic, guys. How you guys doing?
Well, we're awesome. I mean, you know, like I say, we've been listening to you since you first released the first album. So it's awesome to be able to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, guys. It's been a pretty long break, and the music never really has left. And we were always stayed in contact and writing. And one day we just decided to get it down, and we came up with the EP three.
Well, yeah, and I know that you did Kill the Lies in 2018, and then You Won't Break Me in 2019, and so then how about Now and Hurt? When were they done?
I believe they were done last year, end of 2019, 2020. I think that's when they were finished. It was the one thing where we were just going to go in and get together and hang out as a bunch of guys. And we went to New York City to do Kill the Lies, and we reunited with David Bendith, who was the original producer on the first album. And it just felt good in the studio that week. And we were supposed to go there. Actually, we're going to go down and record for 4 or 5 days with David. And then we ended up staying for 10 days. And seeing it through, the whole production, and just hanging out with the guys again, and it felt really good. And we decided when we got home, I thought to myself, "Geez, I think I'm dragged back into this again." And here we go.
Well, I know that Hurt's a song that you guys have been playing forever. In your live sets, it's been around for a while.
Yeah, Hurt. Yeah, exactly. And that, the reason why that came up is because we were going to both, like, we have so many songs, and we have like albums full of material. And we had a lot of, when Kill the Lies came out, we had a lot of requests from all over for people saying, whatever happened to Hurt, or is Hurt going to be on an album or something soon? And so we decided to put it on this EP. And I think October we shot the footage for the video for Hurt, and it's I think you guys will really like the video. It's done very well, and it's being finished up right now, and it's going to be released at the end of February.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the video's good.
What's it like to get to be away for so long and then come back? You know, at least not like you say, away at least as far as recording an album, come back, release something, and be embraced by the same fans.
I think a lot of it had to do with the way we were through our career. Is we accepted everybody and anybody, and we used to opening bands. We were there too, opening bands for us if they needed something, or we noticed that they were short stage space. We would open up to them and help them guys out, because we've all been there. And I think that's a part of getting success, is as you're getting that, you're helping the bands behind you. We've been through both sides of that when we started out. I remember having absolutely no stage, or we always thought, if we get to the opportunity where we're headlining stuff or doing bigger shows, then we're going to make sure that the opening bands are taken care of. And we try to reach out to every fan that we can that gets a hold of us. And along the way, we made great friends all over the country and all over the world.
You know, I think one of the things that always struck me about, I remember Svengali was given to me as for a Christmas gift. And I've seen Under the Influence on, obviously the video, and I get the album, and I'm like, got to get this Christmas crap out of the way so I can run upstairs and listen to this. I gotta stick with the family a little bit longer, running upstairs, just anxious, just loving the album, It was always a band to me that seemed to me like you knew who you were right from the beginning. Like, as soon as we saw you, the band had everything personality wise, everything was already formed. Like you guys were already, you're already Sven Gallien everywhere, where a lot of bands in those early albums, they're trying to find themselves.
Yeah. And the thing for us was, it's just odd. Like Sven Gallien came together in one night, in one day. And a short story is Andy, the guitar player, and myself, we were at my parents' house back in the day in 1986, I think it was. And we were looking for a bass player. And we're just talking about it at my kitchen table. And it was weird. And all of a sudden, the phone rang. And I answered the phone, and it's Sean, the bass player. And he goes, "Hey, Dave, I heard that you guys are looking for a bass player." And we said, "Yeah." And it was a night in February, and like a big snowstorm. And we're about 45 minutes away from him. And he said, "Well, let's get together tonight." And I'm looking at Andy, and going, "There's like a massive snowstorm out there. You want to go for it?" So we said, "What the heck? Let's go for it." So Andy and I made our way up to Hamilton. And we knocked on the door, and as soon as I saw Sean, I went, "Yeah, he fits in." He right away, that, and his personality and talking to him about music, it just fit. So after that meeting, literally half hour later, he goes, "Listen, I know you have a drummer, but I know a really good drummer." So we went to his house that same night, and now it's the four of us sitting in a room, and we're talking, and we hit it off right away. It's like we've known each other for a long time. And then they mentioned, and then, "Hey, like, we know this guitar player named D, and he was playing with Frankie Venom from Teenage Head." And so he called him, and D answered the phone, and we ended up at D's house that night. So as we're all sitting around a table having a few beers and just talking about music, and there's this movie playing in the background, and we all kept on looking at this movie as we were all talking. And we got at the end of our meeting, we said, "Okay, well, you guys want to do this or not?" And we said, "Yeah." Then so Andy and I were going to beeline home, pack up everything, and move to Hamilton. So as we were walking out, the guy said, "What do you want to call this band? Something we should think about." And Steve looked over at the TV and he said, "Let's call it Sven Gallien." There was a movie on Sven Gallien, John Braidmore movie. So it was how the band met, formed, named all one night. And the next day, Andy and I picked up everything, moved to Hamilton. We were living in a factory, and we jammed for about 3 months, and then we hit the road and we never looked back.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing just how fortuitous and just how amazing it all fits together like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a real, it was really weird. It's almost like we knew, it's almost like you knew it was going to happen when we started getting together. And, and the good thing about, well, I would say, I don't know if it's so good, but the thing about us that there was no B plan. We were just going to go find our way. And back in those days, back in that time, it was easier to play because there was so many clubs all over the place. We were playing like constantly across Canada. And then we started to get popular, and we just jumped on a tour bus, and we said, "We need to get down to Los Angeles and start playing that circuit." We took a one-way trip on a tour bus that dropped us off, and we dropped us off at the Troubadour. And we, our manager booked some shows there in LA, and we started playing in LA. So there was no B plan. We were just going to get it done.
Yeah. What was it like then to like when you decided to move from being a covers band to playing mostly your own material?
Well, we, that was, first of all, during that first initial meeting we had, that was the aim right away. We want to start writing right away. Like the next day we started trading riffs and ideas. It was the goal to become an original band as fast as possible. So we got out and we toured across Canada playing covers and this and that and sliding in our original stuff. And by the time we got back, we had maybe a half a full night of originals. And then we decided we had a show at Rock and Roll Heaven in Toronto, downtown Toronto. And that night when we played, we just played strictly Sven Gallien stuff, and that's what we did going forward.
Yeah, I think it's one of those amazing things when you think about about that transition to your own material and just how much fans will start to accept it. But I mean, I know when I think about that first album and how awesome it is, it's super easy to see how fans would accept that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was different times back then. You know, it was everybody looked forward to Friday night, Saturday night, going to the club, seeing live bands. You know, it was great. Great times.
So then I guess, what are the expectations now? I mean, you're signed to RFL Records. So what do you anticipate as the next chapter for you guys? Do you anticipate a full album, that kind of thing?
So Andy, he's the founding member also, Andy. Yep. He's the guitar player. He lives in Beijing right now. And so he comes back and forth when we play, and we do a lot of, like live shows. And when we fly stuff back and forth, we're recording. Then he makes his way here for a few weeks every year just to visit and jam. But he's eventually considering coming back. But it's funny. Andy and I were just having a call the other night. And so you guys will be the first to hear the new plan.
Woo!
So the new plan is we are releasing Hurt. At the end of February, it's going to be pushed by RFO Records across America. The video is pro. We put a lot of time and effort into it. And then about maybe a couple months after that, we're going to release one song, just a song that we wanted to release. That's a departure from three, from the EP3. And just like it's going to be something a little bit more mellow. And it's just a song that we always had in the can, and we wanted to share that with everyone. And then while we're working on that, we're going to slowly keep putting songs out, and then towards a full length album.
Nice,
awesome.
Nice.
You know, I've always thought to myself, and obviously you can't do it now with what's going on in the world, but boy, if we can get a Svengali, live album that just captures that energy in the moment, it would just—I think it would just kick ass.
Yeah, that's so we have tons of stuff and tons of recorded stuff and we have demos that from back in the day. So we were going to put together an album other than what we're doing of just those demos and live shows across the world, and then throw that all on something to have also. So that was another avenue we're going to pursue. But I think we have a lot of live stuff from the Def Leppard tour. So we're going to put that stuff out,
That would kill. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
You're right. It is that energy. I mean, we really were full of energy back then. You know what I mean? we never stopped. It was funny. It was a good time.
Well, and one of the things that I see, especially on your Facebook, and is the fact that you have all the old photos and the magazine covers and that kind of thing. I mean, it's really neat to look back. How much of that stuff did you keep?
Believe it or not, Andy is the Svengali historian. So anything Svengali that ever happened, he has it all. And Dan mentioned to us, he mentioned that, guys, the people would like to see this stuff and reflect, and it brings them back to times when they were, back in those days and where they were, and if, some of the fans at your shows. So if you follow Svengali on Instagram or Facebook, you're going to start seeing a lot of the stuff from the past coming up, a lot of pictures and there's some video, and there's us in, we did what I think we did 30 shows in 33 days across Europe. So there you'll see stuff from that. And so Dan is the social media guy, and he takes care of all that. And he's hooked up with the Svengali historian and Andy, and they're knocking all that stuff out.
Yeah, Dan. Go ahead, Brett. Well, I was just going to say Dan's a great guy, and I was going to ask actually about Dan coming in and the new members, Dan and Sean.
Yeah, it was weird because I can remember the place where I was when he called me. It was actually him and his girlfriend. I was in my garage, and it was late evening, I guess, and I was just hanging out, cleaning my car and truck, and I was listening to Svengali. And I never put on my material. There was a time when I was kind of, because the way things ended, and the way music changed, and to be totally honest, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth in a bit of a way, like, you know, and I never listened to it. And that day I was in my garage and I was doing my thing, and then I put on demos, like the demos, the last demos that we did together. And then I get this call from Dan. I go, Dan, hey, David's Dan from Varga. I go, hey, I haven't talked to you for a million years, because he played on some of that stuff. And I go, Dan, you're not going to believe it, but I've been listening to stuff. And he said, well, I want to ask you. I said, I'm just calling out of the blue, and I'm wondering if you would come to Hamilton and be considering jamming just to get together. And I said, sure, I'm down with that. It's funny. And so I said, sure, you tell me when and where, and I'll be there. So I showed up that day, and not having, you know, I'm not playing live for a while. And I got there, and Sean was there, our bass player. And then Dan was there. And we had another guitar player at that time. Another guy was just jumping in with us to jam with us. And that was the guitar player Slick Toxic. And we started recording. He got busy, so he couldn't make it. So Sean from Varga pulled up, and he took the spot. And then we started jamming, and it felt good again. I'm going, oh, no, this feels good. And I called Andy. I said, Andy, we got together, and it was a good time. He goes, well, I'm going to be back in Canada in 3 weeks. Let's set up some rehearsals, or, you know, just to jam and get together for some beers or whatever. And then one thing led to another, and three came out, you know. Kill the Lies is actually what we started working on.
It's funny, you know, to hear kind of you talk about it, and I'd like to get your impression now, because looking back, I always thought, you know, it was great to see the success that Svengali had, but right away. But I almost wonder if it created unrealistic expectations instead of just letting the band's career grow organically from the beginning. If the push you got right out of the box was almost a double-edged sword.
Yeah, there's a big expectation on the second record, and you know what, there is a bunch of songs, like almost an album in the can of that first record, but you know, like songs that are kind of more related to that first record. Mm-hmm. And that was, some of it was overflow from the first album, and then some of it was stuff that we were writing on the road. Like Hurt was one of those songs. And there's some songs on there that are, I mean, to this day, I think they stand the test of time. You will be hearing them eventually, but, what happened was, number one, we grew as people. So we kind of wanted to experiment with different music and different influences. And at the same time, music was changing like crazy. Like at one time it was kind of taboo to be in a hard rock band with the grunge scene, you know? Mm-hmm. So we started leaning towards that way, and then people said, oh, you know, Svengali went out to Seattle to record because of the grunge scene. We went out there to record because that's where the producer lived, and he wanted to record at London Bridge. That's where Blind Melon did their albums, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam did 10 there. So we went out there, and you know, things started coming out and experimenting. We still had those songs, but things started changing, and, you know, and we got we came out with the Enwire album. Everybody grows. I mean, I'm sure you guys weren't the same people as you were when you're younger, but the same with music and bands. And we were always just dedicated to being, play what we want, play what comes out, and it is what it is. So then Enwire came out, and then we still have all these other songs which we're going to start popping out from the past.
I always thought Enwire's so underrated. To me, it felt like a natural progression. Just like when I see three, it feels like a very natural progression to me. It never felt to me like you guys were chasing anything. And I always got angry with the idea that people were putting that label on you personally. Yeah. So I can imagine how you felt.
Yeah, and that's kind of you know, one thing they don't set you up for, like, you know, one thing when is in success is the criticisms and stuff like that. You try to just trade. You got to be strong mentally and stuff to stay true to who you are and not worry about all that stuff, you know. So I will say that for a little bit, it did kind of bother us a little bit. But then on the other hand, we're thinking, well, you know, do these people want to hear this? Do people want to hear the same type of music coming from the same band? It's like all the time, or do you want to grow with a band? I mean, if you listen to U2 when they started to where they are now, it's a different band, same feel. Like you feel, you know, it's U2, but they've grown. Or there's so many examples of that. But for us, we just maybe it was too fresh, or because the Svengali fans who really really loved the first album, they wanted to hear more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess maybe in their mind we let them down into that way. But in Wire, we picked up a lot of people who were pleasantly surprised at that change, and even more fans opened up. And I've listened to InWire in my truck occasionally, and I don't think it's a. I think it's pretty good myself.
I think it's really interesting what a producer can bring to a project. You know, when you think about Kelly Gray and the sound. I mean, especially of him working with Queensrÿche and stuff like that, and I mean, they had that. They gathered that heavier sound too. I mean, because when you think about the evolution of Queensrÿche, so I mean, I think it was kind of like even his mindset, and then I wonder like how that was when you were working with him. Like, how did he influence you,
Kelly? Kelly has his own vibe, and he's like go with the flow. And as we start, we'll start tracking stuff with absolutely no idea where we're going. And a few songs on In Wire were that way. And then, you know, like there's a song on there called Tired of Listening. And it was a jam. It was a jam in the middle of the night in Seattle. And it was a jam with us and Christopher from Blind Melon. And Christopher was playing the mandolin. And we went, wow, that's different. And it just felt fresh to us. And so, you know, Christopher really liked that song, and he jumped in on that. And then we had the singer Candlebox come in and do some backing vocals on Worms, that's on the record. So it was it was the first time we were a very, very tight-knit band. We never let anybody really in the band. And that was the first time where we opened up and played for the music, you know. And it was nice to hear. It was nice for those guys to come in, and we carried that on through three too. John Howard, who produced Now and co-produced with us, obviously Now and were sorry Hurt. It was nice to have him. It's just a little different. They'll bring out stuff that you wouldn't hear, but they hear, you know. So it was. It was great. It's been an evolution, and now we're all pretty comfortable about who we are and where we are.
I'm very curious actually about the songwriting process of the band now compared to, you know, cuz obviously for various reasons you have different band members. So what is the songwriting process now like compared to when you guys were starting out?
Well, Dan and Sean Williams, they bring a very, you know, from Varga, they bring a very heavy aspect to Svengali. And I think you can hear that. And, you know, Andy puts in, like Sean, he takes care of all his, obviously his bass and he gets involved in the melodies and stuff like that. And Andy puts kind of twists to everything. And they've basically left a lot of the melodies and stuff like that to myself. And so it's everybody brings to the table what they want to play, and then we go for it. So back in the day, it was when we started, it was Dee and myself would sit down and he'd be strumming something or whatever, or Andy would come in and sit down and we kind of work something out. Then we present it to the band, and then Sean would get involved with our drummer at the time, and it evolved that way. But this way, now everybody's sending everybody music. Andy sent over two songs the other day. Dan's working on something, I'm picking through some backtracks, if you will, that I like, and so we can present those also. So now it's now it's like an open free-for-all, if you will. That's what I call it.
How about the lyric portion? How much effort and time is spent to get the lyrics just right?
It starts off with a chorus and an idea, and then that's the most important thing to me, is like that chorus being right. And from there, like everyday things that have happened in my life or in people around me's lives seem to make it on into the lyrics. Like each one of those songs on three, I can tell you the people that were involved, like where it kind of came from and the situations people were in. And, that's where it basically comes from, it's not like just mashed together stuff. It's actually means something to us.
Mm-hmm. It's not a fair question in some ways for me to say how long is, you know, the work on their lyrics, because I guess every song is its own song. So it's every song is going to be different. Some songs is going to be a, you know, maybe a quick thing to get the lyrics right, and some songs is something I'm sure you work on forever.
That's exactly right. Like some come really quick, right? But there's a song, you know, now on three.
Yep.
In the chorus, what's behind the ad libs, that was never there in that song, and that's the song that took the longest. Where am I going there? And so one night I was sitting at my dining room table, and I was just listening to the track and trying to figure out, what am I going to do here? Like, where lyrically, where am I going with all this? And then he wanted to sum it up in that chorus. And it was actually funny because my wife came over, we sat down, we had a glass of wine, and we wrote it together.
Oh, cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
You're probably a better lyricist now than you ever were, because you have that more life experience. You know, you have that maturity.
Yeah, and you're not scared to just say what you want to say. You know, you're not. When you're at the very beginning, everything had to be tough, and everything had to be, you know, except for like obviously the ballad. But today it just seems like, hey, this is what it is. If you like it, great. There's absolutely no label pressure. There's no pressures on anything. Just play what's in your heart or in you, and then let it go.
Yeah, because you don't have to worry about the radio per se. I mean, yeah. all these influences that I think that were probably existed certainly back in those days would be gone. And so I think it's almost like the truest version of Svengali that we're seeing right now.
It's the most. That three, we're very proud of three, 25 years later, 30 years later, and then just showing up. And you know, when Andy and I discussed doing it, he just had one thing that he wanted to make sure. And that was, when bands get together and they're older and it comes out light, if you will, it feels light. And he said, Dave, I want to come out and just be heavy like we are. And like we never skipped a beat. And if we felt like it wasn't good enough or didn't feel like that, or it felt light, then we wouldn't have done it, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cause I always, when I was young, I obviously go see a lot of shows, and some of the bands I used to see that were later in their years, me and Andy like grew up together, and I remember saying to him, Andy, when we get that old, it's over. It's over. I'm not looking like that or playing light stuff and whatever. It's got to be over, because if we don't, you know, and we laughed about it, and we laughed about it during the making of three. And three was it was cool because everybody let their guards down on everything was totally open for constructive criticism or whatever. There was no animosity. There was no nothing. It was just, yeah, okay, cool. That's cool. That sounds cool. We just let it fall out, you know.
Oh, please go ahead.
Yeah, that's basically all I was saying there.
No, it's just, how much pressure was there to put out another song like Love Don't Live Here Anymore? Like, I mean, that's your biggest hit, so I imagine that's a lot of pressure to continue to, like, that could have become the band's calling card to continue to go to that type of song, but you didn't do that, which I appreciate. You know, you were true to yourselves, but how much pressure was there to the band to continue to perform those kind of acoustic ballads and that type of thing?
You know what? It was a little bit, I was, when we, well, this is kind of how we summed it up. We played a festival. It was like the Canada Day Festival across Canada. We played all the way across Canada with Def Leppard and a bunch of bands. And then we got to Newfoundland and we played a show. And soon as we Dee started strumming Love Don't Live Here, that whole crowd sang the song. I didn't say a word. And I'm looking at it and we were all looking at each other and he just played. And I remember this day like yesterday. And I was just looking out at the crowd. The sun was coming down. You know, it was just a beautiful night. And listening to all those people sing that song, it was so cool. And, it's because we do have many sides to who we are as people. And it was nice that we opened up that side on people also, you know. Mm-hmm. And that night, they have the radio station. We had the night before the show, we were invited onto the radio station to the Rock, I believe it was called, to do the top 10 at 10 with them. And the number one song, the number two song was Def Leppard, and the number one song was Svengali, Don't Live Here Anymore.
That's pretty cool.
And it was neat because even the singer of Def Leppard, when he pulled up in his limo to the show, he made an effort to gets out of the limo and he comes over our tour bus just to give us a, hey guys, that was great, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It was nice to be accepted that way. But having said that, that's what we're kind of working on right now. And that's what I have in the can that you probably hear maybe what, April, May-ish. I guess the 2021 version of Love Don't Live Here or that vein.
That sounds great. I have to say, I always liked Whisper in the Rain. It's even more as a ballad. Like I always thought, I'm like, if love was, was such a big hit, if only they had released the other one as well, done a video. I mean, you know, I thought you guys were like, for me, I don't know. Cause that one has the bridge that just, and then it takes off, you know?
Yeah.
And I love it.
So other than trying to do a full length EP, Andy and I were talking about maybe re-recording some of those songs along with some live stuff, and Whisper in the Rain came up because we did a bunch of live shows just before Dee's passing to raise money for him and for the situation.
Yeah.
And we did a little medley of Whisper in the Rain, Love Don't Live Here Anymore, like the small – we did it, and it was really, really well done. And you can just feel that, oh, you know what, maybe my voice is matured now enough and the way we play is matured that doing those songs now really feel – they really feel experienced, if you will, you know.
What do you do to keep up your voice? What you know? Do you do any sort of special vocal techniques or anything like that?
Other than scream at my kids.
So that's what you've been doing for the last while to keep in shape, screaming at the kids. Yeah.
So I over the years I have some friends in music and I used to jam with those guys quite a bit. So that kept me up. But for the most part, I got to be honest with you, I don't know what it is, but I don't do anything.
Really?
I don't do anything. When guys say, okay, guys, we're playing soon, then we get some practices in, and it takes me a few rehearsals, and then start finding it, and then I'm ready to go.
Wow, you know, you got quite a gift there then, I have to admit. That's pretty cool.
I don't know. I'm not really a trained singer by any means at all. But you know, I guess I have been fortunate in that regard.
I'm interested in some of the best experiences that you did have in the early days, especially with some of the Canadian bands. I mean, we've talked to a lot of Canadian bands, and I think there is a certain camaraderie amongst them. So you know, maybe tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I remember one night we played in Hamilton, and this was a long time ago. And after the show, I know it was Svengali was playing in town at one bar, and Tragically Hip was playing in town at a bar. And obviously, it's kind of two different to some degree, two different crowds. But after the show, it's late at night. You know, we know that's the when you used to get off stage at 1 a.m. And I ended up we ended up Svengali and Tragically Hip standing in a 7-Eleven having dinner at 2 a.m.
Nice. That's awesome. You know?
And there was nobody else in the place. There was us guys and Twinkies and Joe Louis and Old Pizza and Big Balls.
Health food.
So that was an experience there. And, you know, and then obviously being on the road, running into, we just played on New Year's Eve last year. We played with, Our Lady, no, not Our Lady Peace. I Mother Earth.
Mm.
Oh, nice.
And they're great guys. And Edwin is a good friend of Sean's, our bass player. And so it was nice to reconnect with those guys. Yeah, it's been, and other than that, we were more, influenced or in the States and, you know, hanging out with guys like when we were on the road with bands down there, you know, in Los Angeles, when we stayed there for a while prior to making our first record. And, you know, we saw a lot of those, a lot of bands from down there. Everybody was at the Rainbow Room, you know, in those days on Sunset Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And, real quickly, I'll tell you one night we were, you know, we finished rehearsals and we, went back to our place and just wanted to get out and say, well, let's go down, downtown or to Sunset and go to the Rainbow Room and grab some chicken wings or something. So we walked in and to the Rainbow Room, and there's John Candy sitting.
Nice.
Jan Aykroyd. They're all sitting there too. So Dee's over there sitting with John Candy, laughing up a storm, eating his chicken wings. And John's, Canadian boys, come over here, sit here. So I think there's a lot of Canadians all over the world and in the States. And when they know you're Canadian or you see a Canadian band or an actor or something like that, you're welcome with open arms, you know.
That's awesome. I have like this really strong impression of what the Sunset Strip was like, and it never included John Candy until now.
it was so funny because that night there was a lot of people in there. Lemmy was there from Motorhead. And everybody was just like, you're just like at you know, your house at a party. You know, everybody was just having fun and laughing, and you know, we all start from the same place, absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And it was fun to see. And as we walked out of that night, out of that place, Dee jumps in a car with Ricky Rocket from, and then bombs around in his Porsche and,
nice.
On Sunset. And it was just, you know, it was fun. You get to see all those bands back in the day when they were just getting going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I imagine Poison or Warrant and these different bands. You just,
Yeah. We used to go every night that we weren't playing. We'd be out watching all these bands, you know? It was a lot of fun.
You probably as a front man probably learned quite a bit from some of those guys. So those are some of the best front men in history, you know, that were playing on the strip in that day.
Well, everybody thought that when we went out and we went to see bands and stuff like that, they were out there just, you know, drinking beers and chasing girls and all that type of stuff. But truly, when I went out, I was going to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was watching.
I see that.
Yeah, and I was watching quite a bit, but. The guy who really influenced me and who I really admired, and I finally met him, which I'm not a starstruck guy by any means, I mean, at all. But I was like, wow, because I remember me and Andy in the early 80s driving around in his Camaro listening to the first Queensryche EP,
mm-hmm.
Queen of the Reich. And when I finally met Jeff, I met him in Toronto, and Kelly Gray was playing with Queensryche that night. And I sat down with him, and he was so cool to talk to, and you know, I got a lot of respect for his talent and how he is. He's a cool guy, really cool guy.
Oh, he's a remarkable singer.
Yeah,
absolutely remarkable.
Yeah,
no question.
Jeff, I told him I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't know what to when I sat down with him. Kelly goes, he says, Jeff, this guy's been wanting to meet you for 20 years or something like that, and I started laughing. Hey, Jeff. And I said, I was kind of a little bit embarrassed and I didn't know what to say to him. I said, well, you see this tattoo right here? And I said, this tattoo was getting done listening to Operation Mindcrime.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, well, I think it's I really think 3 is a fantastic EP. I can't wait to see what you guys are going to, you know, come up with next year. Everything you've talked about sounds like an interesting different path that you're on your way with, you know, when you talk about the live stuff, the demos, you talk about the more melodic stuff and then, you know, just the continued evolution of the band. I'm just really excited. 3 is really, honestly, it's just 4 killer tracks.
Oh,
and you guys are, I'm going to wish you nothing but the best. I know Brett can do the same too here because we're almost out of time. So really, we want to give you the time to promote your stuff, to talk to, you know, the fans about, where they can keep up with everything with Svengali and what's coming up.
Yeah, I just, I mean, on behalf of the band, I just want to thank everybody and such the warm reception by absolutely everyone for us coming back because we didn't know what it would be like. And even people who were not so much following the band were pleasantly surprised we came back and we came back the way we did. And, you can follow us on our Facebook, Svengali, Instagram, our Svengali Instagram account. That's all Dan's territory. I'm probably the absolute worst social media guy in the band. And you can follow us there. And Dan keeps everybody in tune with what's happening. And we got some surprises coming down the pipe. And I think you guys are going to really like this I'm going to call it a ballad. I'm going to call it that. But yeah. I think you're going to really like it. And the good thing about the reason why we want to do this song also is to keep D in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously played guitar on this track, and it's a great track, and I think everybody's gonna kind of dig it. And then as soon as they get over that, then we're gonna punch him in the face again with some more heavy stuff.
Nice.
That is fantastic. Yeah.
Now we have a show title. Now we have a show title. Punch him in the face.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, David, thank you so much. I mean, it's been a great time, and I truly look forward to listening to the rest of the music as it comes out because, like Martin said, it sounds fantastic and so exciting.
Yeah, and thank you guys very much for this time too. Anytime, and hopefully, the goal is that we are coming across Canada when things open up. So we're that's one thing that's definitely on the bucket list and it's going to happen. And we're looking forward to playing all these little nooks and crannies that we did. We don't care how big the room is. We just want to get in there and the smaller the room, the better the time is going to be. Let me tell you.
Well,
we're bringing the same PA, whether we're playing outdoor festival or in a little room, it's all getting in there.
Well, we're looking forward to when you get to Calgary because we will be in the crowd for sure.
Oh, no, you'll start off backstage. We got to get it started right.
Even better. Yeah, even better.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
All right. Awesome.
Well, David, start off with a barbecue at Brett's place.
Yeah, sure. That'll work.
We'll be there. You guys stay in touch. And when we get there, make sure we all get together. It's mandatory.
Absolutely. Love that because, big fans. And like I said, it's just exciting. So thank you so much.
Okay, man. Thank you very much. Take care.
Awesome. Bye now.
don't think you can trust me. I don't think you can believe me. I'm out of my head right now.